Are you looking for a podcast that's on the cutting edge of what's new and exciting on the internet? A podcast for users about the things that matter to them? The Global Geek Podcast is this and more. A podcast about the latest technology news, reviews and interviews, applications and programs to make life easier, sites and services that are useful, fun, productive or just plain interesting. Not forgetting the Get Chicken segment. Presented by two hosts on opposite sides of the globe. We really are the Global Geek Podcast. Find us at www.globalgeekpodcast.com on the podcast network. Two hemispheres, two geeks, one podcast.
Don't ever take sides with anyone against the family again. Ever.
G'day world, it's Cameron Riley. Keep trying to remember that I have to introduce myself in case people are listening to this for the first time. My name is Cameron Riley. Should put on my FM radio voice. It's 28 degrees outside, 2:59, March 28th, 2007. My name's Cameron Riley. You're listening to G'day World on the Podcast Network. Today on the show, as regular listeners will know, I've tried to do this live phone-in show a couple of times in the last month using TalkShoe.com, and it hasn't really worked out. It's kind of sucked. Not your fault. A couple of people that have rung in, thank you very much, but it's just the technology. Everyone's complaining. It's hard. It's not working properly, so I stopped doing that for the time being. But still very keen to get audio input from y'all, and going to start that today with Ken Kennedy. Ken has been a long-time listener to the show, and from time to time has sent me audio comments that is recorded on his mobile phone or his MP3 player or something, and usually he does it while he's jogging in a hailstorm, so it's very hard to hear what the hell he's talking about. But this time, Ken actually went to the trouble of recording something that I can hear, and so I'm going to use that as today's show. This is G'day World, the Ken Kennedy edition. Ken is basically commenting on episode number 217, where I talked a little bit about some of the feedback that I've got about my challenges with religion. And so why don't we hear from Ken, and I'll comment as we go.
Hey, Cam. Ken Kennedy, Kenzoid's autonomous zone, Kenzoid.com. I'm just sending you a quick response to, what episode is this? 217, where you're talking about the comments that you've gotten for you're not making any friends, you're not doing yourself any favors in the style of your podcast, especially the whole religion thing recently. And I just want to let you know, I occasionally post on the forums. I read the blog mostly through, actually, you know what? Your blog isn't in my feed reader. I thought it was. Well, maybe it is. Yeah, it is. It's been in there for a couple weeks now. It hadn't been in there that long. But I used to not read the blog. I was just listening to the podcast, I would read the blog like on occasion. But anyway, I'm reading the blog again. But I read the blog through the feed reader, so I don't always remember to go to the comments and comment on stuff. But anyway, I just want to give you a quick show of support on the whole format thing. To thine own self be true, like you've said. I deal with some of the same things. I'm certainly not as high profile as you. But people find... I understand where people are coming from when they say that, but I'm almost offended because some of these people could very well be agnostics or atheists, but some of them are quite possibly moderate Christians who think that they are, they're not, in your face with their religion, and why should you be in your face with their atheism? And I think that people who are religious don't realize, because you're soaking in it. I mean, we just are soaked. We're just covered, swimming in a sea of our culture that has, religious icons, everything from our holidays to, in God We Trust, on my money, to, everything has a reference to religion in it. And so we are somewhat in people's face when we talk about atheism, just simply because it's so different from what they're used to hearing, no matter how mild-mannered we are. Now, neither you nor I are particularly, on the mild-mannered end of it, but, part of it is just that they didn't want to hear it, in my opinion. And I'm sorry. what would it be like if you were living in an atheist country where it was okay to be religious, but if you were religious, you got people making phone calls to you and saying, hey, you're not doing yourself any favors there, Jesus boy.
Well, actually, Ken, that's where I hope we're going to get to. That's part of my goal is to get human civilization to a point, particularly in the West, in my lifetime, where it's frowned upon to be openly religious.
They'd be like, what the fuck? This is me. This is who I am. This is my God. This is my religion. Well, guess what? I think your religion is crazy. And it's your right to believe in something weird. There are lots of people in this world that do, but it's also my right to talk about it, and to disagree. And it kind of offends me when people say that. I don't have a lot of people say that to me, but I do occasionally get it. It irritates me. And what was I gonna say? It was the main gist. But sorry, I'm in the car, and hopefully I'm not gonna crash here. You wanted to hear me crash, didn't you? There was another point. And the other thing was, people were like, if you were just a little more mild-mannered, maybe these people that you're trying to convince, you'd convince. I'm sure that you realize this as well. And I loved the converted Christian thing, and if you do some more, that would be awesome, but I've never, that's not true. I actually converted a very mediocre Christian way back about 20 years ago. On a long car ride to Atlantic City from Baltimore, Maryland, to go to a bachelor party, I converted a guy to agnosticism at the very least. And last time I checked, he was still he was actually an atheist. So I got one. But other than that, it's never worked. It doesn't matter. It's just a thing about faith. So someone trying to say, if you just tone your rational argument down a little bit, maybe it would work better. You're not really talking to the Christian most of the time. But what you're doing is you're bringing up a debate that needs to be heard, like you said. But it's not going to be heard by that person that you're talking to, almost certainly. But what might be heard is somebody who's listening to this podcast who's much less convinced and is having problems with, with some of the cognitive dissonance within most of these religions, and it listens to your debate with this Christian and goes, Cameron just demolished this guy. He just crushed him like a bug, and all of a sudden it pops into this guy's head. It's okay. There are other people who are atheists out there.
Yeah, believe it or not, my goal is not to crush people like a bug. Although there are some people who do deserve to be crushed like bugs, mostly some former bosses of mine, but that's another story. But the Christians, I don't want to crush them like a bug. I mean, I feel sorry for them and I want to help them, really. I feel like they're walking around deluded and it's not good for them or for society. But, I do hope that, I guess the intended audience for those shows isn't the committed Christian who's made a conscious decision in their life. I realize you're probably not going to change their mind. It's really to the people who have, I guess the intended audience is people who haven't thought about it very clearly, haven't really done a lot of analytical thinking about why they believe what they believe. They've just been led along. Or, as you say, other atheists who are a little bit unsure of themselves or not really sure how to have a discussion with somebody in their life who is a Christian to provide them with, some ammunition, a framework for having the dialogue so they can help the people around them to apply some rational thinking to their worldview.
And it's okay for me to think this way. That's what the arguments are for. They're not for we're just ramming our head against the wall. I got a guy, hell, I had one this morning at work, a minor one. I avoided it a little bit, but, except for that one guy, I've never even come close to actually converting somebody that I'm arguing with. But I think I've had an impact on people who are around before. So I just wanted to give you that, toss it out there, pat you on the back. One of these days I'm going to have to get on the bitch session. I got to remember when that is and figure out what time zone that is in America, so that I can maybe dial in. But, yep, two thumbs up. Love the freaking show. Keep on doing what you're doing. You're kicking ass, in my opinion. You are one of my absolute top favorite shows. You, Dave Slusher, John Udell, a technical podcast guy here in America. You're like basically my, well, and there's another Technometria, Phil Windley from IT Conversations. You guys are basically my no-miss list. And a couple of ones. But anyway, you guys are my big boys. You're my no-miss list, and I'd hate it if it changed. So you keep going. And if Rich would ever start his podcast again, I did like the Gadget Show. But he's out of the loop. Scouter, kicks ass. So anyway, just wanted to leave you that, and hope things are well, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care. See you, Cam. Bye.
Well, thanks, Ken. The no-miss list. I'm honored. Honored to be on anybody's listening list. And yeah, I used to enjoy Rich's show, but, you know, his head is firmly up his scouter backside these days. So good luck to him too. I make fun of Rich and call him a traitor, but I am actually very proud of the lad. And I know that Scouter is going to kick ass for him and Graham. They're going to clean up. Maybe one day when they're billionaires, they'll come back and buy TPN or something. I can work for Rich. What did I want to... Ah, yes, 2012. The rest of the show today is going to be dedicated to the end of the world. You know, increasingly over the last few years, I've had people I know who are into New Agey stuff say to me, 2012, it's all coming to an end in 2012. And, you know, I don't immediately discount anything. I try not to. And I'm always like, okay, yeah, really, where's the evidence? What are you basing that on? And... Excuse me, the thing I always get is, the Mayans predicted it. The ancient Mayan prophecies from the ancient Mayan civilization. And it always makes me laugh when people suggest that because it's old, it's somehow valid. Like the fact that some civilization 1,000, 1,500 years ago that doesn't really exist anymore predicted something would happen seems to give it credibility. Like, these guys knew something. I mean, these guys couldn't even survive, damn it. They wiped themselves out. Although I believe, technically speaking, the Mayans still exist. The Maya civilization, what does it actually say here? Never disappeared. The Maya peoples never disappeared, neither at the time of the Classic period decline nor with the arrival of the Spanish conquistadors and the subsequent Spanish colonization of the Americas. The Maya remain in contemporary Mesoamerican societies and maintain a distinctive set of traditions and beliefs combined with more recent practices, such as the almost total adoption of Roman Catholicism. So, the ones that didn't get wiped out adopted Catholicism, and you know what I think about that. So, but this is the thing that amuses me, though, is this idea that because it's old... Oh, people always go, the Mayans predicted it. Nostradamus. I mean, these people, you know, they didn't even have the internet. What the hell did they know? I don't know. I don't get this thing that because it's old, it somehow must be good. You know, it's this meme that if it's thousands of years old, you got to be careful. Anyway, moving right along. Sorry, been listening to the soundtrack from the Muppet movie recently, as you know. I love this. This is from Wikipedia. Apocalyptic predictions for 2012. 2012 is sometimes claimed to be a great year of spiritual transformation or apocalypse. Many esoteric sources interpret the completion of the 12th Bakhtun cycle of the long count of the Maya calendar, which occurs on December 21st, by the most widely held correlation, to mean there will be a major change in world order. Accordingly, several eclectic authors claim that a major world-changing event will take place in 2012. The 1995 book The Mayan Prophecies linked the Maya calendar with long-period sunspot cycles. The book 2012, Mayan Year of Destiny, claims the Maya may have been instructed in their wisdom by discarnate entities from Orion and the Pleiades. Contact was maintained through shamanic rituals conducted in accordance with the movements of planets and stars. The 1997 book The Bible Code claims that, according to certain algorithms of the Bible Code, a meteor, asteroid, or comet will collide with the Earth. I've actually got the Bible Code. I think my mother sent it to me. Hi, Mum. She doesn't listen to the show. She just reads the blog. What a load of rubbish that book is. The book The Nostradamus Code speaks of a series of natural disasters caused by a comet, possibly as above, which will allow the third Antichrist to disperse his troops around the globe under the guise of aid in preparation for a Bono, Sir Bono. No, he can't be called Sir. He's a knight now, Bono, but he can't be called a Sir because he's an Irishman, which makes me wonder why he didn't just tell him to shove it, which I would have done, a la, you know, John Lennon. Maybe it's him. Maybe he is the third Antichrist. He does look like my former business partner, which, you know, there's a lot of, I think of him as the Antichrist. The book The Orion Prophecy claims that the Earth's magnetic field will reverse. The 2005 book Beyond 2012, Catastrophe or Ecstasy by Jeff Stray reviews several theories, prophecies, and predictions concerning 2012 and finds where authors have used faulty information or have bent the truth to fit their theories. Thank you, Jeff, for bringing a little bit of sense into the issue. The 2006 book 2012, The Return of Quetzalcoatl by Daniel Pinchbeck discusses theories of a possible global awakening to psychic connection by the year 2012, creating a new sphere. Sounds like something Ben Barron would create. It also discusses many other aspects of the 2012 phenomenon from a neutral perspective. Other prophecies and apocalyptic writings and hypotheses for this year include Terence McKenna's mathematical novelty theory suggests a point of singularity in which a great number of things could happen, including hyperspatial breakthrough, planetesimal impact, alien contact, historical metamorphosis, metamorphosis of natural law, solar explosion, quasar ignition at the galactic core, or nothing. I like that. Oh, nothing. The prophecy of the popes, attributed to Saint Malachy, speculated that Pope Benedict XVI would reign during the beginning of the tribulation of which Jesus spoke, and sometime later a future pope, described in the prophecy as Peter the Roman, the last in this prophetic list, would appear, bringing as a result the destruction of the city of Rome and the last judgment. Many New Age spiritualists and philosophers believe humankind will enter an age of enlightenment in 2012. There are a range of varying, generally positive beliefs shared by a subset of spiritualists from the mundane to exceptional, including a positive social shift in age of peace, mankind becoming psychic and connected by a collective and or an evolution of the human race into non-corporeal beings made of spiritual energy. Oh no, watch out! It's the spiritual energy! As a opposed to that normal energy stuff. This isn't your regular energy, folks. This is spiritual energy. Oh, I love it. Or it gets even better. Light energy. Oh, the light energy. You gotta love the light energy. That's far better than your regular energy. Wankers, where do they come up with this shit? Some alien enthusiasts, along with some New Agers, believe 2012 to correspond approximately with the return of alien watchers or caretakers who might have helped the first human civilizations with developing their technology and may have been waiting for us to reach a higher level of technological and or social advancement. Beliefs range from the extraterrestrials having benevolent purposes, such as to help human society evolve, to malevolent purposes, such as enslavement of mankind and or manipulation. The Nepalese ascetic Ram Bahadur Bomjon, the so-called Buddha boy, reportedly told his followers that he would return around 2012. Some proponents of a peak oil catastrophe place major events in 2012. Richard C. Duncan's book, The Peak of World Oil Production and the Road to the Olduvai Gorge, claims that the Olduvai Cliff will begin and permanent blackouts will occur worldwide. Several studies predict a peak in oil production in or around 2012. Self-proclaimed time traveler John Titor predicts that a catastrophic event similar to the parting of the Red Sea will occur. John Titor. I got to look this guy up. John Titor is the name used by the personal persons claiming to be a time traveler from the year 2036 who posted on several time travel-related bulletin boards during 2000-2001. In these posts, he has made numerous ambiguous predictions about events in the near future, starting with events in 2004. I wonder if they came true. Let's see. I don't know about that. But he said that he's just traveling in a C204 time distortion gravity displacement engine built by General Electric in 2034, weighed approximately 500 pounds, and was transported in a 1966 Chevrolet Corvette convertible. This guy was watching too much Back to the Future, wasn't he? The vehicle remained stationary with the engine switched off while travelling through time. Apparently the time machine was removed from the Corvette and placed in a 1987 four-wheel drive truck. According to the post, there were six main components to his time machine. 1. 2 dual micro-singularities. 2. An electron injection system. 3. A cooling system. Gotta have a cooling system when you travel in time. 4. Gravity sensors. 5. 4 caesium atomic clocks. 6. 3 computers. Here we go. He said that 2004 would be the last official Olympics due to global conflicts. No one tell Greece that. Have we already had Greece? I don't even know if Greece have had the Olympics yet. I think they did. They had the last one, didn't they? Athens? Who's next? China? I don't know. Sydney? Have they had theirs yet? I seriously have no idea. He also predicted a second American Civil War from 2004 to 2018, dividing the large cities against the rural areas. That could actually happen. You see Nancy Pelosi leading the Democrats to Civil War. An event similar to the parting of the Red Sea will occur in 2012. Association football, i.e. soccer, becomes the most popular sport in the United States. The Third World War in 2015, a gradual global escalation that was in... Anyway, what am I reading this shit for? Who is this guy? What an evidence of hoaxing. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, what am I bothering reading this shit for? So 2012, that's what I was talking about. Now, as you know, I kind of believe in the coming singularity. And as I said at the beginning of this, I don't discount anything, and I look for evidence. Okay, what reasons are there to believe this stuff? Now, a bunch of, with all due respect to our South American listeners, a bunch of primitive people running around believing in stuff, to me, does not constitute good evidence for believing in anything. This, and I'm not just picking on South American natives here. I'm talking about, all your ancient prophecies. A bunch of primitive people smoking something, because, this is fact. Most of your medicine men, most of your magic men in tribal communities took a lot of stimulants when they were coming up with their prophecies. Nothing wrong with that either. But don't expect me to believe that you're actually tapped into something, although you might be. I don't know. You could be. I don't see... you could be doesn't necessarily mean that there's any reason to believe it. Now, if we take Ray Kurzweil and the technological singularity, we have much better reasons for believing that. I mean, we have evidence... of technological Don't believe me, I can't even talk. Technological progress over the last, you know, 50 years, 100 years, 1,000 years. You know, Kurzweil in his books, particularly The Singularity Is Near, charts this to an amazing degree. The amount of change over time that we are experiencing with technology progress, and it's on a J curve. It's increasing exponentially every month, let alone every year, every decade. And if that continues, and we have no reason to think it won't continue, then at some point we start experiencing so much change that we literally just, you know, go into not free fall, free rise, I guess. And that's what a technological singularity is. It's when you get to a point where you cannot predict what happens beyond that point. That's the idea of a singularity. A black hole is a astronomical or an astrological singularity. We cannot predict what happens inside of a black hole because all of the laws of physics, as we understand them, appear to break down. But and a technological singularity is the same thing. Beyond a certain point, if there's so much technological change going on, we can't predict what the world looks like. You know, when we have complete control over molecules and atoms, thanks to nanotech, and we have some sort of silicon-based intelligence that achieves sentience, and we're able to manipulate our own bodies using a combination of nanotech and genomics, then human civilization, as we understand it, changes so dramatically that we can't be able to predict what happens sociologically, economically, all those sorts of things. And as I said, you know, there's great evidence. Now, I don't think that Kurzweil believes we're going to see that happen by 2012, although we could. I mean, you know, if somebody cracks quantum computing in the next couple of years, we could have major changes. I mean, if our computational capability goes, you know, leaps forward a millionfold in a very fast period of time, thanks to something like quantum computing or DNA-based computing, then, yeah, possibly. But, yeah, 2012 is only a few years away now. And my understanding of where quantum computing is at, we're having some success. You know, there's a lot of theory now behind quantum computing, but they've done a couple of small, very, very small-scale experiments, but we're a long way away from it, from anyone expecting we'll have any major breakthroughs. You know, the time frame for the technological singularity is more like 2035, 2040, something like that. But I don't know. Tell me what you think, folks. 2012, any reason to believe that there's going to be a major thing happen in 2012? Now, there could also be, a media could hit. There could be a world war. You know, as I said on the show before, Noam Chomsky believes that we are closer now to all-out thermonuclear war than we've ever been in the history of the human race. There's a whole bunch of things that could happen, but that could happen tomorrow as easily as 2012. Climate change, global warming, the impact of that, we don't really understand. That could have significant impact by 2012. Again, I don't think most people are predicting that, but we don't really know what's going to happen. If the temperature of the planet rises by a couple of degrees on average, the impact that has on the polar ice caps melting and all of that cold water rushing into the oceans and how that changes the arterial flows, we don't really know. But again, I mean, that could happen tomorrow. It could happen in 2020. It could happen in 2030. Why 2012? So this all came actually because my mum, I started talking about this because my mum sent me a link to a thing about Mayan civilization. And I've actually been, funnily enough, reading a lot about Mayan civilization recently. I've been reading about the Mayans in my big book of ideas that I've been getting through. A lot of interesting stuff with the Mayans and their gods and their book, the Popol Vuh, their sort of religious book and their predictions. Fascinating stuff, the Mayan civilization. Don't get me wrong. You know, we know relatively very little where they came from, what they did, and where they went still, you know, and there's a lot of unanswered questions about the Mayans. But, you know, if their predictions were any good, they would have seen Cortez and the Spanish coming and fucking shit up. So if they didn't even see that coming, or if they couldn't even tell that Cortez and these guys weren't gods, just white men, white Christian men. You know, it's interesting when you read about this period too, you know, getting back to the whole Christian deal, when the Spanish arrived in South America. I read about this in... hell, what was the book? I read a book last year on Christianity. I remember arguing with Father Bob about this a number of times. You know, the Christians, i.e. the Spanish, arrived in South America, and they basically said, we are here representing Christianity, and they would read these proclamations to the Incas and the Aztecs and the Mayans saying, you will submit to Christianity and convert to Christianity, or we're going to have to kill you because you're pagans. But of course, the Incas, the natives, the South American natives, didn't speak Spanish, so they had no idea what they were being told. And they went, well, we've done our job. The Spanish said, well, we've done our job. We've read it to you, so and you haven't obeyed, so we now justified in killing you. Of course, it was, you know, the major cause of death, I believe, was disease. Like, they brought horses and shit with them, and the diseases from the horses that the Europeans kind of inoculated to over time. The South American natives had never seen a horse before, so there was all these, you know, fauna-based diseases that were introduced into the country that there was no tolerance to, and they didn't have time to build up a tolerance to, so it kind of wiped them out. Not to mention guns. Guns were pretty good. A lot of them got killed by guns. Took them a while to subjugate the Mayans, though. Took them, 100, 150 years, I think, before they finally subjugated them all. Anyway, so that's the 2012 thing. I mean, it just makes me laugh, again, when people say, well, they predicted this 1,000 years ago. Yeah, man, they were, you know, drinking their own urine 1,000 years ago. Why the hell am I going to believe anything that they said? But that doesn't mean that something cataclysmic couldn't happen. You know, the whole thing about meteorites hitting the planet. I remember reading Bill Bryson's book, A Short History of Nearly Everything. And he talks about the fact that we don't even... I think it's something like 99% of all of the asteroids and meteorites that are flying around, we don't even see them coming until they enter our atmosphere, because they don't emit any light, and they obviously, and they don't tend to be big enough for us to pick them up until they hit our atmosphere, by which time it's too late to do anything about them. When they hit the atmosphere, they start burning up. But if a big one of these things came, again, we probably wouldn't even see it until it was so close there's nothing we could do about it. And, there's millions of these things flying around out there. The chances are that they have hit the Earth in the past, wiping out the dinosaurs, etc. So there's every reason to believe that one of those could hit the Earth at any moment in time and wipe pretty much all life out. Could happen tomorrow. Which is why we need a technological singularity. You know, my thinking around the technology is we need to progress technology as fast as possible to try and protect ourselves against these sorts of things, against a metavolcano blowing up, an asteroid hitting the planet, thermonuclear war, global warming, overpopulation. These are all things which can be solved by getting better control of our technology at a nano level. You know, if we can figure out how to create food of any kind from a vat of basic chemicals, building it molecule by molecule rapidly, we can feed everybody for free, essentially. We can take care of a lot of these challenges. And, you know, ideally, we can build solutions that will prevent the destruction of all life on the planet, which is, you know, happened a number of times. We've had a number of ice ages. We've had a number of, asteroid impacts. This over the history of the planet, this has happened a bunch of times. Don't forget, the couple of million years that humans have been around is nothing. Absolutely nothing in the history of the 4 billion year history of the planet. And these things happen with regularity and wipe out all life. If we want to survive, you know, we think, whoa, we've had recorded history for 4,000 years. Ooh, it's nothing. It's the blink of an eye in the history of the planet. And if we want to survive, if we want our intelligence and our work up until this point to survive, we need to put protections into place to make sure that we don't get wiped out by any of these things. And as far as I can see, the only way of doing that is progressing fast as possible and hoping that, you know, we can get to a level as soon as possible where we can take care of this shit if anything happens. All right, that's the Friday chat. Oh, yeah, and where's that magazine? The B&T magazine, I mentioned it on the blog yesterday. I do have a copy of it somewhere. I've got an advanced copy. Hold on. Just walk it over. Oh, here it is. To my desk. It's called B&T Digital Media, Australia's Journal of the New Media Revolution, edition 1, 2007. So I think this is a new magazine that B&T are coming out with. D-Media, who's the... the website for this magazine when it launches soon. Anyway, the first edition is the 40 biggest players of Australia's digital age, and the Cam gets a good mention, very reasonable mention. If you get the magazine and you're looking for it, it's in alphabetical order, the listing, and I'm on page 14. I come after Jack Matthews, who's the CEO of Fairfax, and Justin Milne, the Group Managing Director of Telstra Big Pond, and then alphabetically, Cameron Riley. So you got to wonder, that goes straight from M to R. Where are the N and O and P and Q surnames? We don't have enough representation. So if your surname begins with N, O, P or Q, you are being underrepresented in Australia's digital media landscape. Get on your bike. Okay, that's it. Get a copy of it when it comes out, just so you can, read about me. Have a good weekend, folks.